It is Way of the Warrior, Eric, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. And this week, there will be a lot of talk about, what happened this weekend, or what might not have happened this weekend.
That strawweight fight, that was a barn burner. We all watched the strawweights, right?
As you predicted, we all watched the strawweights. It's next on Way of the Warrior.
Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll him out, here's some ground and pound by O'Hara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
Episode 279, it is Way of the Warrior. Eric Hulkran, Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. An absolutely historic night for Bellator on Friday night. I don't think that this is true. I know that we thought that there was going to be people tuning in to check this out. I do not think, and I can readily admit, I did not anticipate the number being as high as it actually is.
Well, it was what? During the main event, Kimbo versus Shamrock, I think they topped out at about 2 million viewers.
Well, last night when I was pulling the numbers, Spike is actually reporting that 1.8 average that was out is actually wrong. 2.1 is the average, so the spike will be a little bit higher.
But really?
Yeah.
People love some Kimbo.
Number one in the 1849 time slot, which went up against the coverage of the U.S. Open, but obviously that would be...
That's a Friday, but still a lot of people were watching, too, to see how Tiger Woods always does, and that's not bad.
Well, and as late as this went, they're not playing golf at 11 o'clock at night. So yes.
This was a pretty late event, though. I don't know where it was.
Number one was the most watched MMA fight on all of cable. The only thing this year to beat it was Gus and Rumble at 2.82 million viewers.
Yeah, one of the Fox Sports 1 cards.
Fox Sports 1, but I think because you were going to face John Jones, that's why that one did.
Right.
Because the only other Fox Sports event that January was McGregor, which I think McGregor now would probably rival those numbers because people want to see McGregor. But
only if he fights Kimbo.
Right now, the most watched fight on cable since January. A huge, huge event. So congratulations to them. That said, I think there's a lot of opportunity out of this. And I thought there was a lot of opportunity Friday night that they just fumbled the ball on. I wonder if this number would be higher, and we can talk about the fight here in a second, but I really want to get your take, because you and I have been talking about marketing on Twitter all week long, so I really want to get your take on this. So you get the Pitbull-Daniel Weichel fight, which was bananas, with Weichel just destroying Pitbull for the first round, and Pitbull cold cocks him in the second round and wins the fight in a stunning fashion. And you've got all this momentum. All these people are tuning in to see this crazy fight, and then they pause and put on a terrible prelim fight. They pause and roll out this four-man tournament, one of which Phil Davis...
Was this a tournament?
Yeah, they've rolled out the four people for the tournament. Phil Davis can't seem to show up for it, so they waited all that time to get Phil Davis. He still doesn't show up for the announcement, so it's everybody in the pool but Phil Davis. Then they announce the title fight between Liam and Tito Ortiz, and then you get Ken and Kimbo. Your thoughts on had they just put those things back to back and forgotten all of this insanity and kept that momentum going as people who tuned in to see this absolutely insane fight between Pitbull and Daniel Weichel and then get this all of this stalling?
Well, I mean, you got stalling, but you got basically them trying to highlight on what they knew would be a big night. I don't think they knew it was going to be that big, but they knew it would be a big night. You got them trying to highlight what was coming up between the tournament, between the title fights, and the Tito fight obviously is going to lean very much toward that audience that's here for this. So I understand what they were doing. I wonder in the end how much it counts, because as far as I'm concerned, I saw some of the fights later. I didn't watch anything live except for Kimbo and Ken.
And if I'm being bluntly honest, I mean, I tuned in to watch it because there wasn't other MMA on, but it was on casually in the background until that Pitbull fight started, because the rest of it was pretty unremarkable. A similar thing that we've talked about with the UFC, when you run this number of events, there's another Bellator this weekend. When you roll these things out this fast, it's hard to keep that momentum going.
Well, this was much easier to kind of have that casual tune in, though, because we didn't have to expect it to go until 1 in the morning. I think their off time was technically midnight, maybe.
Yeah, but they were done, what, at 11?
Right. So their off time might have been technically even 11, and it did that run over, which was fine. I just think that's showing you, too. Obviously, there's a lot of name recognition here. I mean, Kimbo pulled, what, 6 million for the Ultimate Fighter.
Yep.
When
yeah.
he finally got to fight, and everybody wanted to see what it looked like, and they kept that thing a really good secret too. So the guy's got some name recognition. I got a lot of people want to see him, but I think this also shows you that if you just put your card on at what is considered a normal time, you can do okay. Because out of those 2 million dudes, some of those guys were in the West Coast. They were watching this at 8 o'clock. The rest of us were watching it at 11 o'clock. That's okay. I'll watch it at 11 o'clock.
Sure.
UFC, take note. I'll watch a main event at 11. If your main event's at 12:30 or closer to 1 and you're doing a run over, you're not as likely to get me. And I understand sometimes, well, Ken, those cards run early. I don't know if they're going to. I know the plan is for them to be over at 1 mm-hmm. when they start at 10 o'clock. So that's what I look at. I know the plan for this one was to be over at 11. So that's what I was looking at. You know what? I will watch this. I will invest the time. And I wanted to see what was going to happen there. I'm just a little surprised that you thought this was some type of substandard performance, or you think the fix was in.
I don't know that the fix – yeah, let's talk about
you
the
were
fix.
Angry.
So it's not that I was angry. I just have a hard time. I'm all on board with those punches that Kimbo threw ended the fight legitimately. I have no problem with that argument. That's not what I'm saying. I have a hard time believing, and you could totally convince me right here. I have a hard time believing that Ken Shamrock, whose pedigree has been submissions for the better part of 40 years, gets Kimbo laid flat out with a rear naked choke in position and cannot finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Not only can he cannot finish it, he doesn't ever put his hand back behind the head. Like, he doesn't go to finish it. And that's my only... And I'm not even saying the work is in. That just seems really suspect and really odd to me.
Well,
I'll say that.
I think what you saw was that Ken Shamrock, who didn't realize how strong... Let's remember, there was a big weight difference here, too. I think what was... There was almost a 30-pound weight difference, I think.
Something like that,
because
yeah.
this was technically catch weight, because Ken couldn't get above 205.
Right.
So, I mean, there's 30-pound weight difference. I mean, everybody who's been in that cage with Kimbo, Street Fighter or not, has said he's a strong dude. I think what ends up happening is you got a guy like Ken Shamrock, who's 50-something years old, who hasn't really been in the cage for a long time, this fight in the making for 6 years. I'm not saying he forgot how to do submissions or forgot what he had to do in those steps, but I do think that he gets on the ground with a guy who's a lot stronger, who's basically, I mean, let's give a little bit of credit to Kimbo here. He's been willing his way out of a lot of submissions for any part of his MMA career that he's really had. So, I mean, it may not look conventional, but he's certainly built up some type of tolerance here. Is he going to be a heavyweight contender or championship level or even UFC level? No. But is he in a level where, you know, when the combined age of the participants is about 95? Is he at a level where he can compete with that dude? I think so. Some guys are saying he might have tapped. I don't know. I think
McCarthy said he didn't. John McCarthy has said this week that he didn't tap.
Right. So, I mean, and he's the guy in there that makes that decision. And the other thing, too, is if you've really got the choke, you don't need the guy to tap.
No, he goes unconscious.
He goes unconscious, and you flip him over on his belly and show him to the referee like you just brought him in, like a cat brings a mouse into the house. Like,
sure.
Look, he's done. We're done with this.
And
I
want to be very clear for a second that I am not on that full conspiracy train that he tapped and they just ignored the taps so the fight could go. That's not where I'm saying. I'm just having a hard time, given the fact that this is what Ken does for a living and has done it for his whole career, and it's what he made his name on. It's really hard for me to it would be just as hard for me to not comprehend if Royce Gracie was in a similar position and just couldn't finish the choke.
Mm-hmm. Well, he says there was ring rust in there. I think I can believe him. I mean, I don't even remember. When did Ken fight last?
5 years ago.
So, yeah, okay. Well, then I definitely believe him.
And his hamstring blew out, and that's how he lost the fight. So.
And there's some ring rust there, and that's going to happen. And, I mean, they're two old dudes, and one dude's an old, strong guy. And, I mean, strength is one of the last things you lose, too.
Sure.
So what you saw in there was basically played out exactly how we could have all put it in our mind. We probably thought Ken would have finished the choke. I'm not that surprised that he didn't. He was able to kind of get him to the ground and get him in a position where that fight should have been over. But you had a big, strong dude, and you weren't able to finish it. And then he got up, and he started clocking you. And then that was it. I mean, as far as anybody who says the fix is in, usually when guys have a fix in, if they're in on it and they know what's going on, they don't get brained
right,
the way
yeah.
that
well,
Ken Shamrock
they don't
did.
Get cut wide open on the first punch, for sure.
So, I mean, that was an interesting fight because you saw what these guys had left. you know, I hate to say it like this because you don't necessarily want to, you know, start looking that far down the line with a guy that's 50-something years old. But, you know, a couple more fights, Ken finishes that choke. Do I think he should have a couple more fights? Probably not. But a couple more fights, okay, you know what? I screwed that up. And that's another thing, too. When you get a guy like Kimbo down and you're Ken Shamrock, let's remember, you have been doing this all your life. You know, there's an interesting thing. I like to shoot. You know that, Eric.
Sure.
A lot of instructors will talk about how guys who've been shooting for years are sometimes the worst guys to deal with because they think they know what's going on. They always, oh, I do this, I do this, I do this. You bring some guy in who's never held a gun in his life, he'll start dropping, you know, bullseyes into the target. And some of that can be from the fact that, well, I know how to do this, so I don't have to train at it. I don't have to practice it as much. Well, Ken Shamrock, well, yeah, if I take his back, it's over. I don't have to worry about it. I need to make sure I can get him to his back, and I need to make sure I can survive in the stand-up. Do you think in the camp he was really practicing rear naked chokes at any point? Ken Shamrock, after all these years.
I don't. I mean, well, you should.
You should.
Obviously.
Do you think he did?
I don't know. But, I mean,
And if you were him, would you? I'll be honest. I probably wouldn't at that point. I go, why do I need to practice this? I've been doing this for 20 years.
We talked about this last week, though, that it was interesting to see. I mean, you know, the fight aside, leading up to the fight, talking about Kimbo being with American Top Team for 5 years and Ken training with Ken for 5 years, what was that going to do?
And that was a mistake at the end of his career.
Right.
I mean, he kept, and there were a lot of guys saying, you know, he's got more in the tank, but he won't leave the Lions Den, and he won't bring other guys into it. It's got to be Ken's Lions Den. I mean, him and his brother had it out over that.
Sure.
When is their fight, by the way? Aren't we supposed to see that at some point?
Well, I mean, you know, that was one of the rumored things that Tito was going to do before this title fight, is that they gave him Frank, and he turned it down. So that card you saw on Friday night could have been Ken versus Kimbo, Tito versus Frank.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that obviously didn't happen. You don't, I mean, let me at least ask you this. Let's put this out in the open. You didn't think that was a good fight, right?
I thought the fight delivered on exactly what I expected it to. And that's the, and expectations, you know, it's under promise, over deliver. They didn't promise us a technical fight. They didn't promise us a world caliber fight. They didn't promise us a title eliminator. These guys really don't like each other. This guy can punch hard. This other guy's super crazy. And he says he's going to take his heart home with him. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but you want to watch, right?
Sure.
Yep, we all want to watch.
Sure.
We all want to tweet. And we all did.
Yep.
And everybody online who was complaining and bitching about it and on Twitter, they were tweeting about it. You know what they weren't doing? They weren't tweeting the next day at 10:30 in the morning or whatever the hell that Jenna Jędrzejczyk fight was.
It was 6:15 that Johanna Jędrzejczyk fought, but
was it? Oh,
yeah.
I thought her name was Jenna.
You know, but yeah, no.
And she was brutal.
She was brutal and was fantastic.
She was tiny lady John Jones.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Well, let's not go overboard.
But you're 100% right. It was fun to see all the people that spent all week talking about how they weren't going to watch it, tweeting their faces off. I just think. I think two things. I think whether or not you feel the fix is in, I don't know that it's really there's been people online talking about how it's disrespectful and it's slanderous to even insinuate that the fix is in. But I really feel that sort of talk is a byproduct of where this sport has come from. The sport has ties to pro wrestling, as it did in Japan. The sport suffers from every other human being that's in the organization, seemingly. We've talked to many fighters who are like, 50, 52% of them are juicing, right? So every other fighter taking some sort of banned substance, you know, you don't really get the pass for it being the most authentic, most above the board sport. And this is not, to me, this is not something that you should go, how dare you say that?
Well, this isn't how dare you say that, because this is the most pride fight we've seen since Pride has been gone. And Pride was notorious for letting guys know who they're fighting the night of, or having guys basically go in to take dives.
Sure.
And some guys admit it, and then, you know, other guys keep it hush-hush. But the Japanese fighters won't say a word because the Yakuza are involved. So, I mean, you've got all kinds of rumors about those Pride fights for years. So to have a suspicion, I don't blame you if you have a suspicion. I just think people need to realize that this was not Ken Shamrock of 20 years ago in there against Kimbo of today. It was Ken Shamrock, who's 51, given up 30 pounds, who hasn't really fought in 7 years. I mean, like you said, he blew his leg out in the last fight.
Right.
So he really hasn't fought in 7 years. And he says, well, I didn't really train. And it looks like it. And I don't mean he looks bad. I mean, he looks like he's weight trained. And he might have been on some of the vitamin S. A little bit, maybe. So, I mean, it's not unfathomable. I mean, you know, Matt Hughes. And again, Matt Hughes, I'm not trying to compare these two. Matt Hughes beat Hoist Gracie handily. Handily. That was an old Hoist Gracie. That was not the Hoist Gracie we saw 10 years before that. And Hoist wasn't nearly as old as Ken Shamrock is. And we all love Matt Hughes, Hall of Famer for sure. But that was Hoist Gracie. I mean, it happens. People get old. These things happen. You don't finish a choke because you probably didn't practice it for 7 years because you thought you knew it. Well, that's what happened. And, you know, it's the other thing, too, with the fix, so to speak, and the question. You know, he didn't roll him over and do a Kimura. He didn't roll him over and then put his hooks in and then choke Ken out. He basically was able to squirm out because I think Ken thought he might have finished it. And there was a lot of people who thought he might have tapped. Well, he's just been in it this long. He's a lot bigger dude. You got to kind of squeeze harder. You got to get your positioning a little better. And, you know, Ken basically didn't finish the choke. Kimbo barely got up. But once he was up, it was game over once he landed a punch. So as far as the fix being in or somebody saying, you know, they didn't pay attention and he was paid not to finish the choke, I just don't believe any of those things. I think those people were expecting way too much from this fight. And you're comparing it to fights happening now. You're comparing it to guys like JDS and Cain Velasquez and Fabricio Werdum. And those guys are light years ahead of these two.
Sure, but
because that's what we usually see now with heavyweight fights.
But I guess I would take exception to that point in that it's not like this fight is happening in a bubble. It's happening in and amongst those other fights. So I think a casual fan should have those expectations that that they're going to see what they've been seeing the whole night. And for it to not be that, I totally understand that you've got to set your expectations.
And maybe that's another thing, too. I literally, when I saw this fight, only saw this fight that night.
But for the most of us, we had watched the whole thing, or parts of the whole thing.
So Lashley should have gotten you ready for the fact that
Lashley was terrible, by the way.
He won. Where did they keep finding these dudes?
I don't know, dude. It was awful, though.
And he's another dude. Looks great, but man, he's just gassing
awful.
With all those muscles.
Just awful. Yeah. Totally terrible.
So Lashley, Kimbo?
Maybe.
Shut up. You're tweeting the hell out of that fight.
I'm doing it right now. But so you mentioned Hoist Gracie. Hoist said he'd be up for it. Would you watch Hoist Ken?
Hoist who?
Hoist Ken Shamrock.
Oh, Hoist Ken Shamrock. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd watch it. Hoist, shut up. Everybody's
Hoist,
watching
Hoist
that.
Afterwards said he'd be up for that.
Quit asking me these questions. You know the answer, and you know the real answer anybody who's bothering to listen to us has.
Yeah, but I guess I'm leading you into what we talked about on text last night. Like you mentioned, should there be a Legends division?
Masters division.
Whatever you want to call it. I mean, you know, the ratings clearly indicate that there's a space for this. And for 3 years, you've talked about this. You've called it feature fights. You know, when we go back 3 years, you talked about things for Rich Franklin to do to not retire.
Right.
Since he wasn't in title contention, but there were plenty of interesting fights. This clearly points in a direction that especially, and let me be clear on this, I want there to be competition. I want there to be another product to watch because I want to have, you know, another option and another place to feed fighters from and another place for fighters to be built up to end up either in the UFC or going back the other way like Phil Davis. So I don't want Bellator to go out of business. I'm not wishing ill will on them, but this may be the thing that they've found. This could be their niche.
Bellator's?
Yeah, this Legends Masters thing?
If they were to, it would certainly be their niche because I think UFC is in a tough position for credibility. And
well, yeah, they could. I mean, if they put that fight on, it would be as bad as the James Toney fight, right?
I honestly think, and you know, that fight was great. That was a great fight to watch, and it was a feature fight, and we knew what we were getting going in, and we got exactly what we knew. And I think UFC is a little too scared of that right now. I mean, we've seen them ditch the entrances over the years. We've seen some of the personalities that were in the UFC, you know, obviously make waves if they're able to be at that athletic level. But a guy like Ken Shamrock, Tito Ortiz, those dudes are only going to get fights if they can still win sometimes. And that's not necessarily what we'd be talking about with this type of division. So, I mean, Bellator's in the position basically to force UFC to do one of two things. Pay for guys that aren't legitimate contenders so that they don't go to Bellator. Or basically let them cherry pick these dudes that the UFC builds up for years. I mean, and we're seeing that more and more as they kind of decide on who they want to sign. And you know, you see a guy like Phil Davis, he's not obviously going to draw a ton of eyeballs, but he's kind of that ilk. He's one of those dudes where, you know, okay, UFC can't have him anymore because of all the things he's done. We'll just go get him because people know who he is. Rich Franklin's a great example there. You know, I don't necessarily think he's a dude that is going to go do that, but he's also a guy that's got his own things going on. He's doing the one fight promotion right now in Asia. And there's going to be guys here and there. Like, I mean, do you think Brock would take Bellator fights? I think he would. He doesn't necessarily want that UFC grind. But he would take feature fights in Bellator if the price were right.
Yeah, I think, I mean,
after his WWE contract.
I was going to say, you or Joe could walk me through how the contract would look in that particular thing, given the fact that Spike used to be the home for TNA, is no longer, like, is that, I mean, because if that happened, right, if for some reason TV World explodes and Raw ends up on Spike, yeah, now we have a different discussion.
Well, I mean, and they started this. They started this back with Randy Couture, and the UFC freaked out there. And basically, I mean, the UFC is going to run out of jobs. Basically, what they're trying to do with all these legends and these Hall of Famers is give them a job so they stop fighting. We're going to give Chuck Liddell this job.
Right.
We're going to give
Matt Hughes
this job. We're going to give Randy Couture this job so he stops doing that job over there at Bellator. At a certain point, I don't know how much of that they can do, and also how comparable that can be for, you know, a big payday for these guys. And Bellator could be a big payday for some of these guys. You know, we'd have to kind of start digging through rosters and try to remember who's who. You know, this Tito Ortiz fight I find very interesting because I think that's a terrible spot for him.
I think
he's a guy.
Yeah.
If Hoyce wants to fight somebody, let him fight Tito. You know, Tito should have taken the Frank fight. I mean, he seems smart enough to know it. Is his ego getting in the way? Does he still want to say he's a title contender of some sort?
The interview I saw was with Luke Thomas, and he was telling Luke apparently that he's not into what he called freak fights. So Ken Kimbo, Ken Hoyce Gracie, Tito Frank Shamrock, Tito Kimbo. He's apparently not into those things. And he told Luke, and you know, who knows if this is true or not, that the money's the same. So he would have been paid the same to fight Kimbo as he would have to fight Liam for the title, and he thought he felt good enough to fight for the title.
And that might be the case. And that, if that's the case, I get it. I think Bellator made a mistake because the money shouldn't be good enough.
Sure.
Because we might watch the Tito fight, and we'll probably watch him lose to a younger guy I get it. He's your champion. He's got no real name in the business as far as drawing dollars.
No.
Tito's going to be drawing the dollars. So you're going to put the guy drawing the dollars in a fight with a guy that's probably going to beat him. I mean, I think you and I would pick that today, right now.
Right this very second.
So that guy's probably going to beat him, and then you've devalued that dude for other fights.
Only because only because if you go back to his last fight, he looked terrible against Stefan Bonner, but somehow, some way, a younger Stefan Bonner looked worse than Tito Ortiz, which I didn't even think was possible.
All he got was a split decision out
of
that, too.
Liam is not a guy that I think is going to look like Stefan Bonner.
No.
I think he's going to churn out Tito Ortiz in one round.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and let's remember, a guy like Forrest Griffin beat Tito Ortiz. And now, he's a former light heavyweight champion, but let's remember how he looked before he got to fight Tito.
Sure.
You know, I'm going through the fights right now, and you know, taking away that Bader fight, and it's been a rough, rough go for Tito Ortiz. Kudos to Tito Ortiz. Dude headlined a pay-per-view after winning that fight against Ryan Bader.
The Bader fight, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think him and Rashad headlined that 133.
They did, because, you know, it was like the resurgence of Tito, because he won something he was clearly not supposed to win.
So maybe that's what he's thinking here. Maybe I win something I'm not supposed to win, and I get the title belt, and I can fight whoever I want, and it's always legitimate. I just don't see that happening for Tito.
I don't either, and you know, to go back to what we're talking about, I really think when you look at the ratings and you look at the buzz that they were able to do, in stark comparison, and we'll talk about Johanna here in the next segment, in stark comparison to one of the most talented female fighters on the roster, not named Ronda Rousey, the difference in viewership, and I get it, it's not apples to apples because it's on Fight Pass, it wasn't on regular TV.
Well, they did that on purpose because they didn't want anybody doing the apples to apples.
Because you can't do apples to apples. That said, you know, you've got a big hole here. And if you think back to use WWE, right? What is the thing, and I'll defer to you because you're the expert, what's the thing that they do every single year in the Royal Rumble?
They bring somebody back.
Yes, they do. Why do they do that, Ken?
Because the element of surprise is interesting.
And then you go, oh, I love Coco Beware, right?
Right,
like,
right.
And he's here, and then he's gone. You know, so this whole, there's a giant white space in MMA for this sort of thing. And, you know.
Like, oh, look, there's Ken Shamrock and Kimbo, and that's why we did 2 million viewers.
Uh-huh. Well, and I just think Coker's smart enough to realize that. I don't know. I mean, like you just said, we'd have to do some digging and see if there's a pool to make this happen, but episodically, if they can keep doing this, if they can figure out how to do Ken Hoist Gracie in, I don't know, December, I don't know, the Friday before UFC does their New Year's card.
Well, they're going to have Tito fight in September, which is, as far as I'm concerned, their next card. And
well, there's one in 3 days, so
Yeah, their next card's in September,
right?
And see, that's the other interesting thing about this is it's hard, and you know, you put that marketing question out there earlier. Star making's damn near impossible mm-hmm. for them because everybody knows who they are and what they are, and they're a building league for at this point UFC. I mean, but you know, you've seen guys who've run Bellator. They come over to UFC, and it's suspect at best. You know, some of those.
Well, and you know, like you just said, this weekend it's Czech Congo and Alexander Volkov, right? And most people don't know who Alexander Volkov is.
He fought in the WWF.
He's not one of the Volkovs.
Is that
no,
Nikolai's
it's
son?
Not Nikolai's son.
Because if he's not,
but that
should be what they say he is.
Remember how
we thought the Giant was Andre the Giant's son for a little bit?
That was a great turn. That was a great callback, though. So I appreciate that. But you know, the point here's a guy who was at one point a contender in the UFC, in the heavyweight division, who you're like, you couldn't even be bothered to think about watching it on Friday night, right? Like, you're like, I'll watch in September when Tito's back. This is why I think there's a huge hole for that element. And, we've talked long and hard about Viacom and Spike and their endless supply of money and how they can throw it at this thing. And with TNA not being there, it obviously opens up a lot more money for them to play around with. So if they can keep putting these things on that pull 100 or 200,000 viewers on a Friday night to watch Czech Congo, and once a quarter or maybe twice a quarter are able to find Ken Shamrock, Hoist Gracie, or Frank Shamrock and BJ Penn.
Well, let's remember, Strikeforce was fairly successful. Successful enough that the UFC didn't want to bother with it anymore and just bought them. You know, if you're telling me Fedor doesn't have another fight in him, if you get Randy on the other side of the cage, you're crazy.
Or Brock.
See, I think Fedor's too smart. This will get everybody real pissed. I think Fedor's smart enough to know he can't hang with Brock now. And I'm not saying he wouldn't have won that fight 5 years ago when we wanted it the first time. I'm saying there's no way he wins that fight against Brock now.
But to keep the 1980s WWE theme going, as the Million Dollar Man said, everyone has their price.
Right.
So, like, I think you could find a price to get Fedor and Brock in if that was a possibility. But this is what I'm talking about. Yeah, does Fedor have a couple in him to do this legend thing where you don't have to train seven times a year to do all of these mm-hmm. fights to fight the insane amount of people that he fought in Pride? I mean, you know, the stuff they made him do in Pride was clinically insane.
Yes.
Obviously build up his mythos, worked or not, that's not what I'm talking about. But what they made him do to build up that mythos, you still haven't cashed in on that currency. I still think, and I think you will agree with me on this, losing to Dan Henderson and losing to Verdum has really done nothing to get people to not tune in to see him fight.
Oh, no, I agree. And I still think the Dan Henderson fight was probably the biggest fight of his career because of the eyes on the sport. I mean, that was on CBS.
Yep.
That was Fedor. You know, the mythos was there. What can he do against Dan Henderson? And I think it's interesting. You bring up Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson's a guy that UFC shouldn't be bothered with, but I think he's employed because they don't want him to go to Bellator. They let him go once, and they saw what happened.
Well,
he drew eyeballs to CBS.
Absolutely.
He drew people to watch Fedor fight.
You let him walk out the door right now after he cold-cocks Tim Bosch. I mean,
And that's really an interesting position because you want to talk about the dynamics. You want to talk about UFC being a monopoly. You want to talk about all these things. Viacom is essentially, at this point, keeping fighters on their roster because those fighters can draw eyeballs. Now, obviously, the UFC likes them, too. They've got enough events. Again, I don't care. I think some people got really pissed that Henderson Bosch was headlining a card. That's stupid. They're going to draw dollars. They're going to draw eyeballs. Let's remember, at the end of the day, how many dollars did you make for the company? That's how you make dollars for yourself. That's how it works everywhere in the world. Even if you own your own business, you got to make dollars for the company. You're not there for the sport of it, so to speak.
Well, and think about this, you know, to wrap this up before we go to the next segment. If you're Viacom or you're Scott Coker or you're Bellator at large, however you want to look at the entity, you can now walk into an advertiser's office and go, hey, I want to leave this on your desk. This is a rating sheet from what we did from Kimbo and Ken, which was better than every other televised UFC event this year except for one.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they've done that,
guys.
Let's remember too. Miller Lite was in the center of that. What do we call it? The cage? Circle? We
yes.
can't call it the octagon. We get sued.
We can't call it the octagon. Patent pending.
So Miller Lite's in the center of that thing. Dave and Buster's is all over it. I mean, they've got sponsors. They've got buy-in. And they've also got what I find is very interesting when we want to talk about these UFC comparisons. This is why I side with Dana White a lot when people get mad at the UFC. And he says, look, we're kind of in a death match with Viacom. UFC, they're good at selling. They're good at selling. They know how to sell sponsorships. They've taken some of that in-house. They got Reebok on board. They're getting their fighters paid. They're good at selling. Viacom is great at selling and leveraging.
Sure.
And you buy this and you get this. UFC only has their product to sell. Viacom has 50 TV shows and 30 networks to sell. And sometimes that rubs off on the organization. And sometimes Miller Lite's in the cage, not because necessarily they're really that big on Bellator, but you know what? F you, Bud Light's in the middle of that cage. We want to be in a cage. Plus, we're going to get a buy over here for this.
Right.
And we're going to buy this over here.
We get Bar Rescue.
Our bottles are on Bar Rescue.
Right, whatever.
There's 10 other outlets there. And what ends up happening is that company can take the hits that UFC can't take. UFC's had to cancel events. You will probably not see a Bellator event ever canceled because Viacom wants it for the 120 minutes they give them on TV.
They nearly.
We'll clear the commercials. We don't care if you do a 0.5 because Ken Shamrock's leg fell off before the fight because he was rolling around doing something stupid, which I really thought up until like 9:30 that night was still a possibility. So Viacom is not going to cancel an event. UFC has to cancel events or they lose way too much money on some of these cards.
Ken, they almost had to cancel this weekend. Because of visa issues.
Oh, the Berlin card?
No. This one coming up with Yoel Romero
Machida,
right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, these are things, like you said, that Bellator will just push on. But I think the ability to go in and, you know, say that you beat every televised UFC event all year long.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, to be able to say that you've beaten every pay-per-view that Demetrius Johnson has headlined. Right? Like
right.
Everything you ask the customer to pay $60 for, regardless of how great you are at selling, that just makes the job easier.
And that's what I say. They're good at selling, and now they're against somebody who's and we've seen battles like this on our own scale and in different industries that we followed. A lot of times, if you've got the better product and a good team, you can win. And the better product in this case, I'm not talking about fighting. I'm not talking about athleticism. I'm not even talking about fighters. Product is the number of butts in the seat and the number of eyeballs watching. And right now, the product is too even for UFC to not compete there. And by that, I mean they've got to get even better to compete against a company like Viacom.
Sure.
Because there's too many avenues to sell. And UFC has UFC to sell. That's it. And whatever version of that it is, whether it's their gyms, whether it's their performance center, whether it's their clothing, that's all they've got to sell. Viacom doesn't have just Bellator to sell. Now, I'm sure there's a concentrated team on it. There's some dude that, you know, is ultimately responsible for that and all of those things. But that's not their end game. And that's hard for a company like UFC to deal with sometimes. And it gets harder when you're going to walk into a business and you're going to walk in there and somebody, all they know is that UFC stuff. That's all that they're thinking of.
Sure.
Oh, I can. Yeah, hell, they'll buy Bellator thinking they bought UFC because sellers are that good.
In some cases, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and all they know is you just showed them a number. They don't care that it was Ken Shamrock. They're not going on YouTube and going, oh, this guy fought in backyards. I would really much rather have the guy with the Xbox logo. He's just a fighter. And they don't care. They care about numbers. And right now, you've got Viacom with a very spectacular set of numbers to show potential clients. And it's going to be very interesting to see how that rolls forward. Now, again, you got to keep delivering. But they should be able to deliver numbers here and there like that. And Viacom can take the rest of the hits and spread out those buys. It's very interesting here because, you know, people don't usually think of the UFC as underdogs. And I don't think anybody thought Kimbo Slice and Ken Shamrock were going to go in and turn the business upside down. I'm not saying they've done that, but they've certainly, like you said, added a wrinkle in, and they get to walk in with this piece of paper. And, you know, we've worked in this business long enough. Dollars and ratings don't lie.
Nope, they don't.
It doesn't matter if they are lies. They don't lie at the end of the day. And right now, you've got ratings that beat almost all your cards, and there's dollars that are going to be going in because of that. And those dollars are going to directly affect the UFC in some way or another.
So just to wrap this all up, you thought it was a fix then?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I think. I think some dude in charge of Bar Rescue really wanted Kimbo to win.
All right. When we come back, we will talk about Johanna Jędrzejczyk, her amazing performance this weekend, and we'll talk about the cards coming up this weekend as well. All of that is next. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. Way of the Warrior, Eric Hulgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. We talked enough about Ken and Kimbo. The other event that happened this past weekend, Johanna Jędrzejczyk successful in her defense against Jessica Penne. Jessica dropping down to strawweight to fight for the first time and getting absolutely, positively murdered in Berlin by Johanna Jędrzejczyk. The aftermath, though, Johanna broke her thumb and could need surgery, so she could be out for a minute, which is a bummer because I'm sure the UFC would like to get her back in there as soon as possible because it was a fantastic performance, albeit on Fight Pass, albeit probably not a lot of people watched it in real time, as you joked in segment one. That said, I mean,
can you still watch it now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
You know, that said, an amazing performance, and the way that she just, there was 2 minutes in the first round that Jessica Penne was kind of feeling it out, and then Johanna just turned it on, and it was like a sparring match for 2.5 rounds until the ref finally called it after she had caved her skull in. I mean, the photos, if you haven't seen the fight, the photos really tell the story. Mm-hmm. But you really should see the fight because her ability to throw front kicks to Jessica's head and her ability to, I mean, amazing feigning of jabs that turn into elbows into people's eyeballs. I mean, she's just fantastic at Muay Thai, as you would expect, given the fact that she came from that pedigree. But a great performance by her, and excited to see her back in the cage. The other fight of note that night was Dennis Siver losing to Kawajiri. And my favorite part, which I think you'll really enjoy, is afterwards, Kawajiri said he at one point he was thinking about retiring, but now that they're putting the new drug policy in, he thinks he can win a title because it will get all of the cheaters out of his way.
Wow. It's a bold move, Kawajiri.
He called them monsters, but he meant cheaters. So he said,
I totally get what he's saying. There's got to be a lot of dudes out there that are looking forward to this. We talked about this before, that there's a lot of dudes that were probably cheating. They're not going to be able to as easily now.
Not only as easily, but you know, for as much as they're rumored to be testing, it's going to be very difficult to, not impossible, but it's going to be very difficult to plant the Balco plan on top of this, you know, where the science is constantly ahead of the test, so you're able to keep taking new and more exciting drugs. I think some of the fighters that...
More exciting.
Right.
Are you selling them?
Yes, I am. It's the sponsor of this week's podcast sponsor, Balco Industries.
Drugs.
All of the drugs. But, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, is that the fighters that are in those desperation modes where maybe they've lost two or three in a row and they need something to get them over the hump, those are the ones that are going to become victims of this. Mm-hmm. And Kawajiri might be right. I mean, I'm going to be fascinated when we do our 300th show in October, who's actually still on the roster at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about Bellator and who they could be plinking off as this thing happens. This is a very real thing that could happen to be a bellwether for Bellator.
Where do they do most of their cards?
Well, I don't actually know.
I'm just trying to figure out how they can avoid the...
Well, they just moved to Texas, right? Because they don't test anything in
Everything's
Texas.
Everything's on a casino reservation now.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, this could get really interesting as we get to September and October and see who's still even in the organization.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, we've speculated enough. We won't know until it actually happens. We're getting closer and closer to that. So, what are we? A couple weeks? In July 5th or something like that?
Yeah. So it's the 6th, the week after weekend of the 4th of July. So you can get your fireworks and steroids on, and then you got to knock it off.
Then you got to watch your pee.
Then you got to watch it.
You got to watch
your ass, son. Okay, so Friday night, Czech Congo, Alexander Volkov. We talked about that. Pat Curran on that card. Joe Schilling on that card. A fun card if you're looking for some MMA on Friday night. On Saturday night, UFC Fight Night 70 that I alluded to nearly canceled this week because of visa issues. It will still be the headline fight of Lyoto Machida and Yoel Romero, which I'm very, very, very excited to see. The co-main event is Ponce Babino against Lawrence Larkin. That is a new co-main event because what was supposed to happen, it was supposed to be the bantam and lightweight finals of Ultimate Fighter Brazil. That is now going to move to UFC 90 in Brazil. Read into that as whatever you would
UFC
like.
UFC Fight Night 90.
No, 190. The pay-per-view with Rousey and Beth Korea. In August 1st in Rio, so that'll be, you know, whatever it's going to be. Eric Silva and Rick Story, they were supposed to be on the card. They are no longer on that card. They're going to be moved to another card. So this thing has been kind of nuked. And on the backs...
Everything has been kind of nuked. I mean,
well, but nothing like this, where essentially the entire thing has been gutted except for Lyoto and Yoel Romero. Yoel Romero, who is already in Coconut Beach, Florida. So, like, he has to drive 10 minutes to get to the venue. Like, that's the only reason I think that that thing's still... saved, but not a great story leading into this weekend when we're coming off of Ken and Kimbo, right? Because all the casual fans are going to be tuning in now to see what happens between these two organizations. And not that Bellator has a stellar event this weekend, they don't. But the UFC card, if you ever wanted to look at a fight night card, and I know you've said this a million times, but if you ever wanted to look at a fight night card that had just one fight worth watching, well, this is clearly one of them.
Yeah, and well, and again, I'm you know, I was trying to look it up now. Man, they're really good at hiding when these are.
Yes, they are.
I was trying to find out, too, because what we have is a one-fight card, and I bet you anything it's going to start at 10 o'clock again, like usual. And, you know, I'm going to say I'm going to have a tough time trying to watch this one live again.
And, you know, I don't know what there's – we talked about this last week, and I don't know what there's to be done about the time frame. But
maybe, and maybe I'm just noticing it more and more. But, man, we're talking about it, and then I sit there and I watch these cards, and I'm like, man, here it goes again.
But when
it's 12:15, and we still aren't on the main card.
Well,
10 p.m., main card.
You know, when you were
– in Florida.
Right.
This isn't on the West Coast.
Nope.
They're not trying to get people in at 7 o'clock. What was that ridiculous thing they did? They made people get up at 4 in the morning. Wasn't that in Poland or something?
No, that was the Swedish one that was the $2.82 million. They made them go to the venue at 2 a.m. so they could put it on at 10 p.m. in Eastern time.
Yeah. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. It's a show. It's in Florida. Start the thing at 8 o'clock. Start the thing at 9 o'clock. I mean, it's not that hard. If you give me – am I the only one that feels like 9 to midnight is totally different feel than 10 to 1?
A 1,000%, and this is what I would say as I was getting ready for the show this morning, and you know, I was thinking about the Ken Kimbo fight, and you know, am I ridiculous to think it looks suspect? All of those sorts of things, and I'm going back and I'm thinking over the course of our friendship, which now is over 20 some odd years, right? You and I collectively have watched tens of thousands of MMA fights. Between Pride and Bellator and Strikeforce, Elite SC, UFC. UFC now doing 58 events a year. And if you think that they've got 10 to 12 fights on each one of those, that's 600 fights in the UFC alone each year. So how many nights do you think that you can stay up past 1 o'clock in the morning doing this one singular thing? Especially when we're in this time of year. You're in the summertime when people are doing outdoor stuff and there's lots of stuff competing. And I would be remiss to say that I think most fans, yeah, a fair amount of fans, are sitting around just waiting for July 11th.
Oh, for sure.
Just waiting for July 11th.
I mean, that's basically what I'm looking at with the UFC. And you tell me, oh, Machida's on the card, cool. I'll try to set the DVR because the damn thing's not going to start till 12:30. And again, that's a really tough thing when you have this kind of setup too. You've got one fight on the card I'm interested in. You might have eight other great fights that night. We just don't know. It's MMA. I mean,
you said it 2 weeks ago. You know, you might get Bosch Henderson. That card was awesome.
Yes,
but we don't know until we start fighting.
Right, and we know right now that there's only one fight we really care about the result of at this point. So we're going to try to watch it for that fight. And you know, maybe, and this could be, you know, the UFC just doesn't care. I mean, it could be at a certain point. And I don't mean that they're dismissive of it, but they just know, okay, we're going to have to do this. So we put these cards on, and we put them on at 10, because you know what? This is our set. We're in Vegas. This is our time. This is when we're going to do it. So when we do the pay-per-views, we've decided that this is how everything's going to be. You know, and strategically, that might have made sense in some room in a meeting. I mean, we don't know. There's a lot of meetings and a lot of rooms, and some guy goes, you know, for branding purposes, I really don't think we should bounce the cards around. Now, I have trouble believing that when you have these pipe pass cards that float around. I think one of the genius things they did for a while, and they were running fewer cards, and this goes back to, I think, some of the Rich Franklin cards I remember specifically. I think one of the genius things they did was, no matter what, when they were on Spike, and this goes back to Viacom, and this goes back to guys there,
right,
probably telling them what they had to do for their TV. It didn't matter if the card was at 1 in the afternoon Eastern time. Didn't matter if the card was at 10 a.m. Eastern time. Wherever they were in the world. You know what? That card came on at 9 o'clock again that night. So if you missed it and you were a casual fan, you could watch that thing as if it was live. And you always had it on at that time.
Yep.
And I find it very interesting that we don't see that as much anymore. I get we're now in an on-demand world, and if it's on Fight Pass, you don't necessarily need that. But I still think there's something to be said about creating an event and creating a moment. And I really think that they're missing a little bit now, because the UFC could swing their stuff around and say, hey, you know, we're UFC. We're going to put it on at 10. You're going to watch it or not? And I look at this card and I go, no.
Well,
no,
thank you.
Eddie Gordon is not going to make me watch that card at this point.
You know, and nothing against Eddie Gordon, a fantastic fighter that, again, most people aren't paying attention to, and this is the point of these cards. But I would say, you hear a lot from Dana White about how he wants to be the biggest sport in the world and how he wants to go head-to-head with the NFL. The one thing that the NFL does is all of those games are on at the same time every week.
Mm-hmm.
Till you get to playoffs when you get a Saturday night game occasionally. But by and large, it's 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's two teams in California, right?
Right.
It's 1 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock
Yeah,
Eastern.
They don't bounce that around. I mean, obviously you have your night game. Sometimes they'll do
and
that.
And you get one night game and you get Monday night football, right?
Yeah, but California game doesn't start at 10 p.m. on Monday just because it's in California.
Correct. This is what I'm saying. If those teams are on the 1 p.m. Sunday, then they start at 9 a.m. in California,
mm-hmm.
right? They probably work scheduling out so that doesn't happen too often. But my point is, to your credit, yeah, Viacom knows that you need to set appointments so that people know that they can get it. I had, when we were at one of the last sneaks that I did for the movie company,
mm-hmm.
I bumped into a guy who had not watched one of the cards that started at 6 o'clock in the morning and literally thought that the re-air that he was recording was mm-hmm. the real thing.
Yeah.
So you still have people that don't really understand that you're bouncing cards around because it's terrible marketing.
Well, I mean, until this became such a huge topic on the show, I would do that all the time. I would call you on Saturday, like, where's this fight? You're like, dude, that was at 4.
Right, that was at 2 in the afternoon.
And I would say, why the hell was it at 4? That was stupid. I'm busy at 4. And again, you don't, UFC, your world doesn't revolve around mine, but neither does mine around yours at this point. And that's coming from somebody who's sitting here that makes time every week to do this podcast. So that should tell you something. I think, man, if we can just get that hour to slide, that should be our next thing. We got the UFC to set the notifications up. We got them to start putting real times on the posters in some spots. Somebody there's got to be listening and going, hey, why don't we slide TV cards to 9? Because, again, we've said it before. Fox doesn't put them on at 10 o'clock at night.
No, it's 8 o'clock.
It's 8 o'clock.
Period.
Yeah, that's what time they're on if you want to be on Fox. And I don't think that would hurt. Even boxing. We watched the Mayweather fight. That card started at 9. They didn't expect us to sit there all night. And it's a good thing, too, because we had that delay in the middle of the card with the pay-per-view problems.
And if you don't have that delay, it ends at a reasonable time, right? Like, if they don't break the pay-per-view model because...
For 45 minutes.
Yeah, if you take 45 minutes out, you're done by midnight.
Like, even Floyd Mayweather is not making that request of you to stay up until 1 in the morning.
No, he just wants the $100. And at the end of the day, especially when you're dealing with a pay-per-view, you want two things when we're dealing with pay-per-views. You want butts in the seat. And they're going to show up for a 9 o'clock main event just like they would for an 11 o'clock main event.
Mm-hmm.
And you want people to pay for the pay-per-view. What would happen? And I would, if I was in charge, I would love to play this whole thing out. What would happen, Ken, if you started that pay-per-view at 8? How many more people would buy the pay-per-view? They'd be done at 10:30 or 11.
I think the only argument that I would make is I think you get a little too far off the West Coast there. And I know I've been saying over and over again, you've got to worry about the East Coast.
We'll do 9, right? Like, what?
I think 9 is your great cutoff.
If you up it up one hour.
Baseball and football, they cheat. They do that 8:47 thing or whatever they do for Monday Night Football and the West Coast. And they can get away with a little more than UFC. I think 9 is that sweet spot because you'll have the card starting in California at 6. That's not great, That might seem a little early in spots, but you're not near the main event for another 2 hours. So you can still have that time to build up and get to it.
Let me ask you two questions. One, you went to wrestling this weekend. What time did you go to that?
It started at 7.
Okay, thank you. What I would say is, why wouldn't you cheat and do the baseball thing and start at 8:45? And I say that because when you start your pay-per-views at 10, the first fight isn't at 10:21 or so.
Mm-hmm.
When you're done doing all the hyperbole, running all the videos, all the sponsors, thanking all the things, bringing out Dana White, thanking Joe Rogan, when you're done doing all that stuff, it's 20 minutes after the hour before I see the first punch.
So if you're in California, you're fine.
Started at 9:45. Let's just try that. Bump it up 15 minutes and cut all the BS so when I tune in at 10, I'm seeing fighting.
Mm-hmm. And so that they might be moving through the fights. I'm with you. I think this is where, when they look at the sport and where it wants to grow, they'll be fine with young dudes for the most part on big cards. I think you're going to have problems, you know, where these cards without a main draw throughout are just going to be DVR'd. I mean, you can't fight that at this point. So do they not care about live eyeballs? Maybe not. I mean, we're seeing a lot of integration within the actual events of the advertising. And as that becomes more important, which it should, you know, where the eyeballs come from and when they watch becomes less and less relevant. But you still have the deal with Fox Sports. I'm really sure they'd like their spots watched. And I don't skip the spots because I'm some anti-advertising crusader. I skip the spots because it's more convenient.
Right.
That's what I do.
Well,
that
goes into, you know, this is interesting how much this is blurred the lines between what we do for a living and what we do for a hobby in this podcast is that's people, outside of money, that's people's number one currency is time. How can this thing save me time when you're going to ask me to do it 58 times this year?
58 times this year, and when I do it every 58 time, when I do it 58 times, I know for an hour of the three-hour broadcast, for an hour, nothing's happening. And it's not like the NFL where the action's blah, blah, blah. No, it's happening on the field. I get it. It's not game time. But we're on the field. We're not in the cage. For a good hour
right.
of every three-hour broadcast.
Easily.
I mean, we do our events at Celebration Cinema. And it was kind of fun this past week when we have a big fight. We all get to talk. We're all kind of hanging out together. But there was still a lot of downtime there. And, you know, the girl that recognized the terrible female fight, who was running the bar up at the front of the theater, also recognized, wow, they don't really fight that much.
Right.
And,
I mean,
no, we've got a good hour in here where, you know, you've got sponsors and you've got other. And that's a pay-per-view where ostensibly there's no commercials.
Right.
But there's a lot of commercials.
There's a lot of commercials. All right. We will follow along with everything that happens in Bellator on Friday night and then what happens on Saturday night between Lyoto Machida
and
Yoel Romero, which, again, very excited to see what is going to happen at that fight. Machida has looked great when he's not fighting a guy named Chris Weidman. Yoel Romero, there's lots of questions about how ready he is to take on Chris Weidman, and we'll find out some of those questions this weekend. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.